This is the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast.
So, talk to me about this executive order that was brought to us by the White House. Was it yesterday?
Yeah, it was yesterday or the day before. Let's see. So, Joe Biden, and you know, we're going to get a little political, unfortunately, on this one. So, it was actually 2 days ago.
No, us political? Come on.
Well, you know, we try to keep a political free form, right? But that's just the way it's going to be today. It's going to be
IT. You know, cybersecurity is political. It is the new staging ground for war.
And this thing will be, this thing conversation will probably get explicit. So please, if you don't want to hear foul language, you may want to tune away now because who knows what's going to come out of my mouth in the next 10 minutes. So essentially, Joe Biden is said that, you know, we are going to crack down on cybersecurity, that, you know, we want to make sure that government is more secure going forward, yada, yada, yada. When I look at this stuff, it really is a bunch of fluff that has been spoke about many, many times before to some degree. There's a framework called NIST, N-I-S-T, and most DOD and DOD contractors go by what's called the 800-171 framework, which is a set of controls that's under self-attestation. So you just say, oh, yes, I comply. You know, I agree on this, much like most of PCI compliances. But now the White House is actually saying, well, no, you've actually got to prove somehow, I guess, that, you know, you're going to actually be conformed to these. The amount of time that it really took for Joe Biden to come out and say something about this and this executive order actually being released, I think was under 24 hours. So I'm sure they had this in their back pocket ready to go that just wasn't, or was just ready to say, okay, drop and, you know, put to the press. Have you read this thing at all?
I've read it. I am of two minds here. First, I'm really happy to see something put to paper and codified or ordered that, yes, you need MFA. Yes, you need zero trust. And they even went so far as to define what zero trust is in the federal system. But then you have the other side of me. And that side says, why are we waiting this long to do something like this? This should have been in play 5-10 years ago. This isn't something that should have came about today because of a pipeline or SolarWinds from last November. The other thing is the DoD is launching CMMC, which I like, except for levels 1 and 2, because they're just a waste of time. There's no logging. There's no SIM component. And if you don't have that, there's not much postmortem that you can do. But why not take CMMC levels 3, 4, and 5 and apply it across the entire federal base and then have what would then become CMMC level 6 through whatever be the top secret clearances. Let's have the entire government speaking a single compliance language, not saying, hey, you're NIST 800-171 here, you're DFARS. I mean, it's confusing.
It is. And I really do wonder, right? Sorry, I'm kind of, the screen's going to blank out here for a moment as I'm trying to navigate through screens here. But I do wonder just how much this really is going to take in place. So we do have the transition already in place from the NIST 800-171 framework over to CMMC. So right now, that is still a self-attestation, but the auditors are going through their certification right now. There's supposed to be auditing starting to happen, I think last I heard was in Q3, maybe Q4 now, just because the whole COVID pushback of things.
August, I think it begins.
Maybe, yeah. So yeah, into Q3. So it's really interesting to see what exactly is going on, right? I don't know how much of this thing is going to actually potentially change as, you know, we're already going through CMMC. You know, there's been several publications that from some of the government officials like, yeah, we already comply because they already knew about CMMC. So they're already going down that pathway of compliance and getting ready for that. So this CMC is just that level above the NIST 800-171 framework.
Now, I think in terms of CMMC, we should make it clear that this is a DoD initiative. This has nothing to do with the civilian side of the government. So I'm sure there are probably some rules and some laws and strokes of a pen to make it applicable to the entire federal system, which I think is, I think that's what should happen. I don't see the point to anything dealing with self-attestation. I've said it over and over again. I've seen instances where HIPAA and CJIS are completely abused because of the self-attestation nonsense, and it's disappointing. The one thing about this executive order that I really don't agree with is the timeframes. I think it was 180 days to implement MFA. I'm sorry. That's a 30-day job, even at their scale, if that. Okay, they've got Duo in there. They have what they need. It's not like they have to go vet new solutions. It's a matter of rolling it out. And the other thing is NIST has been charged with coming up with these new guidelines. They have 6 months to give the first draft and another 6 months to finalize them. I don't know a single program ever in the history of this country that finished on time and didn't get exemptions, waivers, and extensions. And there's even language in here providing for the extensions and the exemptions.
Yeah, I'll try to see if I can find it real quick. But there's been several spots in here where it says if as a director, you cannot implement to multi-factor authentication, not 2FA, but MFA, inside of your organization or your specific department, you just need to send off this letter and things of that nature. And it really is freaking alarming that it's like, you know, these things have been a problem. Why? You already got government officials going down CMMC. You know, you and I are both going self-attestation for CMMC, just to be completely out there. We're securing our own houses and securing our clients because of this initiative. But it's, I don't see what the freaking big point, the big deal is. Why do you have to drag your feet? Except for the whole thing around, oh, well, we never really were as compliant as we said we were. So
maybe it's do as we say, not as we do. But in terms of MFA, it's a very easy solution to put in place. And I think the only limiting factor there is going to be the team that you have to implement it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that any government, not just ours, any government is using systems without MFA, they're just asking to get popped.
The one thing that, this is the one part that really alarmed me, all right, and to quote it out there for the audio version of this, you know, within 360 days of the date of this order, the director of NIST shall publish additional guidelines that include procedures for periodic review and updating of the guidelines described in this subsection, where it goes on and on more and more about NIST. Why? What point is NIST going to be anymore when we're already in a transition to CMMC? That is controlled by the DOJ.
No, CMMC is controlled by DOD, not the DOJ.
But DOD, yeah, no, sorry, yeah. But yeah, the DOD. So there's so much of the NIST stuff that's in here. I don't understand why they're in here anymore.
Because that's what they have and that's what they're hitching their wagon to. I mean, as I've said, you're rolling out CMMC to the DOD. Let's go ahead with that. And in parallel, let's make it available to the entire civilian base of the government. That would just make too much sense. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I guess working in parallel does make sense, right? But, you know, I really think there should have been a lot more in here, you know, mentioning the bilateral movement to CMMC.
Well, I don't think that's on their radar, quite honestly. I think you and I want to see CMMC in the federal civilian space. CMMC looks to be kept to the DOD and their supply chain. I mean, let's be honest. I'm happy they're having that zero trust conversation. I don't recall anything in here really talking about a vendor's inability to see inside of the software the government's buying from them, which would be zero knowledge in my mind. But it's a step in the right place. But again, I don't think you need 6 months for a first round draft, and I don't think you need another 6 months for a finalization of it when you have CMMC there. And that's just where I sit with this.
Exactly. So that really brings up a great point of the one thing I was actually having a discussion with some of our counterparts in some of the private Zoom rooms is, all right, if CMMC, we have the executive order, we have the transition for CMMC, I really wonder if CMMC will now, because of the executive order, start replacing GCC High down to the local municipalities. I think so, but what do you think?
I think it should. I don't like having these multiple compliances. I think, you know, the HIPAA, the CGIS, Sarbanes-Oxley, PCI, they're all trash. They're all garbage. I think CMMC is built to secure the nation. And if that truly is a good compliancy and it has a tiered approach and has the levels, let's apply that across every business out there, with exception to CMMC levels 1 and 2. You know, I was reading an article recently that DarkSide, our favorite ransomware group of the hour, they do not like infecting systems that have EDR on them. You're an incident response. You tell me. What are your thoughts on that?
So EDR is, all right, so here we go down a rabbit hole. The reason most of these folks are not going to mess with EDR is because you can't disable it. Most of the EDR platforms, you're not going to be able to disable that EDR platform. You're not going to be able to get around it. A lot of the traditional AV, Symantec, Webroot, you know, as much as I hate to quote unquote throw shade at people, but it's what it is. You're able to obfuscate, you're able to get around those type of solutions and be able to drop your ransomware payload. The Bitdefender, I've heard good and seen some good things about the Sophos MTR recently. Their reporting, from what I hear, is not very good.
I left them about a year ago.
The reporting on it, I know, is complete trash.
No, absolute trash.
And
with peace and love.
With peace and love, exactly. We really need to have a meme. I think he actually showed that in one of our private groups. With every time you do that, just that whole thing of peace and love come up. But anyway, I digress. It's really hard. If you have a EDR setup that is properly configured, not just installed blindly and let people just run amok. And
you can't just install it and expect it to work. You have to configure these things. Tell me more.
You know, I got a client right now on the West, I'll just say the West Coast, that doesn't understand, just because they have Microsoft 365 through a vendor, they're like, what do you mean we need to set up the security on this thing? I'm like, but it's in the, they literally said, but it's in the cloud. What do I have to do? I'm like, all right.
Everything.
Let's sit down. You know, I don't really drink anymore, but I'll drink my coffee. You drink your beer and we'll have chat.
I have my daughter's water bottle here, so that'll have to do.
Yeah, we'll not get into health talk. But anyway, but yeah, I mean, they're not going to go after EDRs because most of them will stop them in their tracks.
So if EDR is a barrier to entry for these ransomware guys, why not just put EDR on everything and wait for them to figure out a way to circumvent? But at least it buys us time. I know you do it. I do it. But when I say we as an industry, you know, including the pizza techs out there.
So we take it as a minimum. At a minimum, our clients, even my incident response, you know, we work with several companies that use Carbon Black for their incident response and stuff like that. You know, they have EDRs and stuff like that. But at a minimum, you need to be deploying EDR. You know, like I said, even in my ransomware and incident response cases, we deploy EDR every single time. We got to find out what the footholds are. We got to find out where they are still at, if they're still in the network, things of that nature.
Here's a question for you. Have you ever gone in post-incident for IR and the client had EDR installed before they got popped?
Not yet.
So why is this not a headline? Why is this an obscure article written? And I came across it by accident, despite our best practice. And by our, I mean yours and mine, of putting EDR into our clients.
Because why we are best, we are doing what we call best practice. It's not industry best practice. That's why you have Joe Biden and everybody else doing these damn executive orders. Because, you know, I've said it before, and I'll keep saying it till the day I freaking die. Businesses are going to do it as cheap and as long as possible until they're forced to make a change. And unfortunately, it's typically a ransomware incident that makes some change.
What you're saying is good, fast, cheap. Pick two. Cheap has to be one of the options.
Pretty much.
Okay. How cheap was that ransom for Colonial? you know, the one they said that they were not going to pay?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's always a great thing. So, you know, from the, you know, the whole stick it to the bad guys, right? You know, Colonial comes out and, you know, they're just like, we're just going to recover from our backups. We're not going to pay these a-holes and the proverbial middle finger, right?
And this was Wednesday, this article.
Yep. This was Wednesday. They said that, you know, we're not going to pay it. You know, it was said to be $5 million for the ransomware payment.
Which in the grand scheme of things is a little bit of money considering the effects the shutdown could have on the country.
And there was just pure revenue that that company, I'm sure, is generating per day.
Well, I believe it was their billing system that got cryptoed, not the actual ICS system or the ICS for the pipeline.
Mm-hmm. But then, you know, we're hearing, oh, we're getting great. You know, we're getting back up. And then this is just one article. Oh, wait. We actually did pay the $5 million ransom.
Last week.
Yep. Which was before they said, we're not going to pay the ransom. So it's like, oh, we're going to pay it, but we're going to tell everybody we're not because we're supposedly honorable people or whatever the case is. But no, they're a bunch of fucking hypocrites. Sorry. I warned you to begin and this is going to get explicit maybe.
I'm good with it. I'm good.
So it's, I mean, this really bows the question. So the part that really pisses me off right now is the fact that Joe Biden issues an executive order on cybersecurity, right? This is all based around Colonial. This is all based off SolarWinds.
I do think it was based off of SolarWinds primarily. I think Colonial just made it come out a little bit sooner. But I, as you said, I think that executive order was typed up. I think a few changes may have been made recently, but I think it is a direct result of the SolarWinds breach, which, let's be honest, according to their CEO, is just a minor, small breach.
Oh, you about seen me throw my chair that day.
Despite, you know, SolarWinds single-handedly doing more damage than Benedict Arnold ever did.
But when you take a look at the executive order, like I was getting ready to say, you take SolarWinds, you take Colonial, this executive order does dick in resolving these two incidences. You could have had all the executive orders in the world. They're not part of the DOD.
There needs to be ramifications for companies like these, like Colonial, for failing to implement proper cybersecurity policies, systems, protocols. Because if a state of emergency in 17 states can be declared for their downtime, then they are of national interest. What I think the president should do is go in and nationalize them.
But isn't that a little bit of an overreach? I mean,
dude.
You get into the whole net neutrality issue and everything, right?
Everything's an overreach. But my point is basically it's a shot across the bow of private enterprise here saying, guys, you're raking in billions of dollars every year. I'm not telling you got to spend billions on cybersecurity because it's not going to cost them billions. Something the size of Colonial, 50, maybe 100 million a year, give or take. Can't be that much. I mean, if you get the right team, they would have been far better off.
On a side note, if you're looking for a new cybersecurity job, I hear Colonial's looking for somebody.
Better you than me.
I'm not stepping into that.
I do not want to go into that dumpster fire. I am. Mm-mm. No, I'm good. I'm good with that. But here's another question. Is DarkSide on the OFAC list?
No.
Okay.
And here's why.
Okay.
Well, two reasons why so far. I'm sure it will be soon.
That probably are.
If not as of today. I haven't downloaded the latest edition OFAC. But the nobody can tie where DarkSide is. It's believed they are in Russia.
Okay.
Russia, of course, makes no claim that it's, you know, DarkSide is an ATP, which means, you know, government-sponsored, government actors. Don't know if that's true or not. I don't know. I'm not here to play that freaking rigmarole mouse hole with anybody. So until they say or they can confirm where DarkSide is originally originating from, we do have countries that we are not allowed to do business with from an incident response.
But it's not just countries. It's also Bitcoin individuals or organizations that go on the or an asset.
The other side of the coin is the wallet addresses.
Okay.
That typically get listed on there. So when you download the JSON file or the XML file it will have a ton of Bitcoin addresses or Monero coin addresses, whatever that they are using. And DarkSide uses both of those.
Actually, DarkSide has their hosting in Iran. Isn't that automatic OFAC list?
Yeah, now.
This is an article, and I'll send it over to you so you can put it up, from November of last year. So if they've already been operating out of Iran, they should have been on the OFAC list, and Colonial should not have been able to pay them.
But how true is this?
It's from Bleeping Computer. They're the holy grail of our industry. What are you talking about?
The holy grail of definitely putting out a bunch of information. You know, and I'm not saying, I'm not throwing shade at Bleeping Computer. They do a ton of news articles that we get our content from, right?
But oh, absolutely.
But it's double extortion for stolen work. Yep. Situation violation. Yeah, I'll have to look into this a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, there are sanctions against a lot of this stuff, right? I mean, you're seeing, you know, the largest group that we've seen, you know, Evil Corp, and there's a lot of it, right? So I don't know. We'll have to see what.
Well, I think it's too late for DarkSide.
Announces that it's intent to use infrastructure hosted. So, yeah. So I remember seeing this now. So this is where the grayness comes in. The intent to use infrastructure hosted. It doesn't mean it actually is in Iran. They intend to use it. So that means, did they actually move their servers? Because DarkSide has been known to go down and dark from time to time. This and then come true. Back. And I guess that kind of really brings us to the whole other thing of supposedly DarkSide ransomware is going quits after servers and Bitcoin stash has been seized. And I will call bullshit on that.
Didn't they do this in January of this year when they released mm-hmm. their decryptor for free for everyone? I did see that DarkSide will be paying out their affiliates by May 21st of this year and then shutting down.
So I've been, since that we had that conversation, I've been doing some digging. DarkSide is a RAS, ransomware as a service. They had one of their operatives, affiliates, subcontractor, whatever the hell you want to call them. They were using, unfortunately, the same key across multiple clients. Bitdefender picked up on this over the holidays, right around Christmas time when there wasn't much going on. Why, I don't know. That's normally the most times that ransomware incidents happen. But
amen.
For some
it's
reason,
a religious time for some.
It is. But they were going dark, and you know, one of their people were apparently using the same key over and over and over again. So there was about 22% of the infected people who could use the Bitdefender's version of DarkSide to unencrypt their files for free. They have come out and said, "Oh yeah, we fixed this thing, and thanks for bringing it to our attention. You don't ever have to worry about not being able to not decrypt your stuff." But I can tell you, you know, they're saying DarkSide gang has lost control of its servers and money. I don't know, because so this is where things are going to get a little funky, and I can't say a whole lot. I've got 4 cases right now with DarkSide in our incident response. That while their name and shame site is down, and you and I talked about it the other day, because I was looking for some, we had a couple of clients that said they weren't going to pay, and they were getting ready to post that data. So we kept constantly refreshing and, you know, seeing, you know, what information they're actually leaking to find out how much of a notification needs to be made from a legal aspect. And then we just couldn't see their site anymore. Apparently, there's a lot of speculation right now, apparently, that they just threw up their hands and say, we quit for now, which they've done before. There's rumors saying that their servers got seized. I don't know, but I could tell you with 100% certainty that their payment portal is running. I am on it.
Oh, that's been confirmed. And some people have said that it's the government that seized everything, is just leaving it on for people to get their decryptor keys or what have you.
It's not.
But I think it's just a money grab. I think they mm-hmm. want more revenue.
But see, they're not going to get more revenue unless you're talking about the U.S. government.
Well, no, I think Dark, who's running, if the payment portal's up, aren't they able to collect payment?
They are able to collect payment.
Okay.
And I'm talking to them in their payment portal for some of our cases, because it was believed originally that the dark side actors were controlled by some government entity. And if you opened up a line of communication, you can get your decryptor.
I believe the term is called independent contractor. It's a, it's a different tax bracket.
Yes.
Or I'm sorry, it's a different tax code.
But yeah, so I reached out, you know, on two cases that they said that we can go ahead and start engaging. It's the same folks.
Okay.
Well, if it's not the same folks, it's definitely of the same speech. They're talking exactly the same way. So
are we going to see a Dark Side Part 2 under a new name?
Oh, yeah. If not, Dark Side just coming back more fierce than ever. I don't know. This story is far from over. It really, really is.
There's a lot of speculation that a lot of the hacker forums are distancing themselves from anything to do with ransomware because it has become a dirty word. With the Colonial Pipeline, there's a lot of attention on them. And you don't punch out of your weight class unless you think you can win that fight. And I think that maybe that's what happened with Colonial. And that's why they put out their press release of saying, hey, we are apolitical. We don't want to hurt society. We just want to make money. And maybe this is a rebranding for most of these ransomware guys.
Maybe. I mean, if you remember back when everything was going on with COVID and even before COVID, ReEvil, NetWalker, Maze, DarkSide. I don't think DarkSide was out then, but maybe so. But a lot of them took a vow not to attack medical clinics that were providing emergency services. You know, your mom and dad, family practitioner, things of that nature, they're right. Fair game. But the emergency rooms and clinics were
off limits. The hospital institutions, yeah. But then some of them turned on that and they went cryptoing anyway. So it's a matter of not believing anyone. You know, it's going back to zero trust, right? In a different application.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a bunch of people who commit crime.
For a living.
And for a living, and you're going to believe what they're saying? You know, it's like, you know, I mean, to take an extreme, let's just say you caught the robber who just came in and cleaned out your house, and you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I'll put everything back. Just pay me some money, and I'll put everything back, and I won't ever.
I think that's what they call the extortion piece.
Yeah, the whole double and now triple extortion.
Triple extortion, yeah. By the end of the year, we'll be up to quad extortion. Don't worry. They'll figure out a new way to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I'm really interested to see what the next couple of weeks really show. You know, it's.
I think we're going into one of those lulls where things are going to quiet down a little bit. They will regather and figure out what they have to do.
So now is really the time to start talking with your security team, your IT security team, and finding out, okay, before the next wave.
Install EDR.
Install EDR. Lock down your stuff. Because, I mean, there's another group. It's called Avalon Ransomware.
Yes.
They don't care. No, I mean, their name and shame site is going massive. I think in the last 2 weeks, they've hit over 500 companies.
That is impressive.
Like, it's nuts. So, yeah, the story is far from over, especially from a ransomware standpoint. It's really interesting to see what DarkSide is really doing. I know DarkSide is actually still collecting payments. They're not giving out their decryptors for free on
according to the articles, those are coming after the 21st, after they pay off all of their affiliates. But again, you never know.
Yeah.
You know, Toshiba just got hit by them last week.
Supposedly. Yeah. We'll see.
But they were able to get back up with backups. So, guys, there is a way through this, and I implore you to really test your backups. It doesn't make sense if you're backing up every 5 minutes if you're never testing them.
Yeah. So, I mean, if y'all look into this and you're like, what do we do?
Call Eric Contact or call me.
Exactly. Our links are down in the bio. We're happy to have a conversation with you.
If it's incident response, don't call me. Call him. Because I'm just going to call him and charge you 30% for the privilege. So just call him directly.
Exactly. Well, anyway, man, I'm getting ready to bow out for the weekend. I'm not sure if anybody actually
Are you going to smoke anything on the grill this weekend?
Yes, actually, tomorrow is National Traeger Day.
Okay.
So I am planning to do some ribs, planning on doing a whole thing. I will be on the smoker. There are several people in the new neighborhood that will have been.
How does that work? You got the tongs in one hand for the smoker and your cell phone getting all the ransomware alerts on the other?
Exactly. Not have my laptop behind me on a stand or whatever.
And the wife speaking to you, just being like, yes, dear, yes, dear.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds about right. Sounds about like every man's weekend.
Sounds about right. So, but it should be a good time.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, guys. All right.
Thank you. I'll take care.
Thanks again for joining us for the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast.